It's so sad to have to turn down the volume on Julie Andrews' beautiful voice from My Fair Lady. But it's WHFR Dearborn, and it's 1 o'clock and time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. It's the new WHFR Journal for Friday, October the 22nd, 2010. Hello and welcome. Thank you for listening today. It's going to be a fantastic show as usual. And our WHFR reporters are chomping at the bit because they don't have their microphones on. Hello, Dennis. Hello, Amy.
Once again, we're never surprised to hear that.
No.
But it's nice to be here.
What, the microphones are not?
Right.
Yes. Gotcha. He said a great show as usual, so I like that optimism.
Always. Yeah. In fact, better than usual.
Well, I can't debate
every
that.
Friday
it's right. Too
new
early.
Opportunity.
I'll let you know in an hour.
It's certainly newer than usual. Because
right.
It's the freshest we can.
It's
we can
very
have.
Definitely the freshest. Like nice. Like the fruits and vegetables at the farmer's market this morning.
Beautiful. How was it?
Segue.
They were very fresh because, okay. And they didn't get unfresh because of the temperature. But it was lovely out there. Nice sunny day in Dearborn. Only one more week for the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. We are expecting a phone call and interview with Republican candidate Suzanne Serini, who is, yes, a current councilperson here in the city of Dearborn, and she's supposed to be calling in, and we're going to ask her why we should vote for her. We've already talked to George Duraney and Daryl Smith, the other two candidates for this office, and want to get her opinions and ideas and give you a full range of choices for the November 2nd election. Whenever she calls in, if you happen to be listening, Suzanne, I think we said about 5 minutes after, and that's a couple minutes from now, but anytime you call in, we can put you on. Dennis, were you able to make it to the third Sustainability Roundtable?
I did.
Tell us about that.
It was fantastic. Of course, Mr. David Norwood was also there. He, as you know, is the sustainability coordinator for the city of Dearborn. And Mr. Norwood talked about, he basically brought us up to speed on the things that are going on in the city, which, excuse me, is all the things that we talk about in the show. It's kind of funny as they're coming into fruition. Mm-hmm. He did talk a little bit about the new rail and he's using terms like high speed. And I know that as we've talked about it, discussed on the show, the money wasn't necessarily there to move that in place.
Not from the federal government.
No. But he sounded optimistic. So without saying this is what's going to happen for sure, he said that we're still moving forward.
There's some state governor, is it in the East Coast or whatever, that just denied the federal funding for high speed rail for their... for between two of their major cities.
No kidding.
Yeah, they said, you know, we won't accept it. And I can't figure out the reason why. It would obviously cause, you know, support some jobs in the area.
Right.
And I know that the high-speed rail projects that were funded nationally, a lot of them were, it was like political payoffs. It was little buy-offs. And like we believe here in Michigan, it would be so significant for business to have high-speed rail between Detroit and Chicago.
We do.
But in some cases, they're doing high-speed rail like 50 miles.
Right.
Well, gee, you get on the train, you get off. I mean, come on, at 200 miles an hour, what is the point of just a demonstration?
Right.
That doesn't make sense. Let's really do high-speed rail that a lot of people will want to use all the time, you know. So this was only like 150 miles or whatever between two of the major cities in whatever state it was. I'm just saying, I think it was a Republican, you know, we don't want to make the country go further in debt. We don't need stimulus money. We'd rather have people out of work in our state, and we don't need transportation that is ecologically more sound than cars. No, we don't. I can't figure out the logic, but so he's turned it down. But in Michigan, we'll take it.
Right.
If they want to turn it around and send it somewhere, let's do high speed.
Well, I learned at a very young age, never say no to money, regardless. One of the other, the focus of the third panel, a sustainability panel, was in fact colleges and universities and how we can, beginning at that level, create the type of atmosphere that sustains sustainability.
Of course.
So in other words, people our age aren't supposed to be as into it as we are, and we're not the norm, but supposedly the next generation is going to keep us in line and then move forward with that.
But we are so young, Dennis. I mean, I don't know how people younger than us could even exist.
That's why I said supposedly, you know. But anyway, the last thing I wanted to say was that University of Michigan Professor Dr. Michael Stryberg spoke at length about that and about what we can do and initiate these things, not only at the student level, but all the way up through administration at the major schools.
So as the third roundtable, it's becoming a sort of getting into the action.
Absolutely.
Agendas.
Well put. Yeah, yes. We talked about things. We talked about what needed to be done, and now we're actually putting plans in place to execute. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I like that term, execute.
Well, you know, and I told them that there's every chance that you might be there for the next one. So a lot of people are counting on
that. Looking forward to that. Yes, no, we had a great time giving the final exam here and answering all those questions about, can I get an extension?
Right.
What about those bonus points, Mr. Koronek? No, there aren't such things. Sorry.
No, trust me. He's not lying.
So I just love acting like the cruel father at the final exam. But everything went off fine here, but I felt I really couldn't leave at that point if it was a matter of a mere lecture. We have superior forces here that could handle any topic about radio. This is our staff training class that we're referring to, folks, where we actually train people from the community, could be you, and students here at Henry Ford Community College who choose to take the course. There's a CL2, or College of Lifelong Learning version, which is just the same class, the same lectures, the same work. Yes, there's work, oh my God, to learn all about WHFR. And our new sections are pretty much all filled for the second 8 weeks of this semester. Just began yesterday, and very popular class, and hopefully we'll get some really good people, maybe some more news reporters.
Can't have enough.
Well,
there's
wait a minute.
Was that your mic?
There's room for everyone. Okay.
There's a phone call.
Hang on. So talk among yourselves there, folks.
Was there a good turnout at the sustainability conference?
Less than usual. Okay. Less than usual, but strong voices.
Okay.
Really?
Because you were mentioning there were representatives from both schools there, from Henry Ford,
from
Community
Henry Ford.
College, and from U of M Dearborn.
From U of M Dearborn. Of course, Ian Tran is a student at U of M, and he is the president of their environmental association.
Okay.
And one of the chief organizers of this whole, the panel each time. Michelle Martinez from the Sierra Club is always there. Just wonderful, wonderful people, and they're all about, okay, what can we do, and it's not just talk.
And it seems like, I think we're going to go to Suzanne Cerini in a minute, but one of the few organizations where there's cross participation between, U of MD and Henry Ford, so that's nice
to hear.
And
the community, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we should be online with Suzanne Cerini. Are you there, Suzanne?
I am I'm here. How are you?
Very good. Well, we're doing just fine here. It's another beautiful fall day in Dearborn, and the campaign excitement is building here. Only a couple of weeks to go before November 2nd. Obviously, some people might already have done their absentee balloting, although here at the Journal Show, we always recommend people get as much information as they can and wait as long as they can, even if they're not going to be in town at that point. So we're happy to get you on board here today and talk to you about your candidacy and your opinions about what needs to be done in the state of Michigan. As our listeners know, we've already had an interview, similar questions too, by the way, with George DeRaney earlier, who is the Democratic competition you have, and Daryl Smith, who is the U.S. Taxpayers Party candidate. So we try to accommodate all the candidates here when we have the time on this show. But thank you very much of making yourself available today. I'll turn the questioning over to Amy, our news director here, and she'll get started.
Well, thank you, Jay.
Thanks for being with us. Tell me first how we should refer to you, Councilwoman Cerini, or...
You can call me Suzanne Cerini. Suzanne's fine.
Okay, thanks. Well, start out. Tell us a little bit about your background, your education, job experience.
Well, I've been self-employed most of my life. Started way back many years ago in the south end of Dearborn by the local 600 Ford Rouge plant when my parents had a restaurant. And my job then was filling up the little glass bottles of coffee, so that'll kind of give you an indication of my age for the local union workers. I have four children, 13 grandchildren. I'm mostly been in restaurant business all my life. Some, you know, deviations, delis, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Pizza place.
I'm sorry?
You had a pizza restaurant, too, which still has your name on it, I believe, over at Rotunda yes. in Greenfield, right?
Greenfield and Rotunda, right? And I had the Village Cafe and, a few others. And like I said, we started in the South End.
Right.
With my parents. Not really sure what else you wanted to know about me. I've been on city council for 20 years. This is my 21st year.
In 2009, you were elected to the your sixth consecutive term in with the Dearborn City Council.
Yes, what? As Council President Pro Tem, I might add, which was I was very pleased about. And that was kind of a difficult year for my family personally, and I was concerned about the election. And as it, you know, as you see, it turned out well.
Yeah, tell us why you've chosen to run for the 15th District State Representative seat.
Well, like I said, I've been on council for 20 years. And, you know, this decision wasn't one that I made lightly, I can tell you that. It's not the first time somebody may have asked me to run for a higher office, but I believe everything comes in its own good time. You need experience to navigate in today's economic times. So because of my experience, you know, frankly, because of the lack of leadership, that we currently have, again, speaking with many friends and supporters that encouraged me, you know what, it's a great fit for me. When you first start this, you wonder, should I do this? You begin to do your research, moving from local government to state government actually is very different, and so there was a lot that I needed to research before I made that decision, and I came to the conclusion that of everybody that had filed, I was the best candidate for the job.
Tell me what you believe the skills or abilities are required, you know, for this for the state representative seat.
Well, I mean, you know, just the legislative experience alone is a plus in my column. One of the things that you have to be able to do in this climate, especially, is to be able to work well with others. You know, I've been a Republican, you know, since Reagan, and if in the past, I've been supported and endorsed by unions, you know, chambers, a broad scope of support is, you know, what I was able to assemble in all of my council races, meaning that I work well with others. I'm able to bridge gaps, communicate, you know, when you're a public servant, it's not about you. You know, it's about doing the right thing. And so I was fortunate enough to be endorsed by, you know, all of the local unions, UAW, congressmen, and others that were not of my party. And they well knew that I was a Republican. So I think that says a little bit, you know, about how I work with people. And I think that's going to be critical at this point. We have had nothing but a standstill in Lansing. And as a result of all the bickering and fighting, you know, they've created bad legislation because people say no for the sake of no and yes for the sake of yes. And therefore, I don't believe they're doing their job. You know, the job is the quality of life for the people in the state of Michigan and, you know, in my case, Dearborn, obviously. So, you know, working well with others, working across the aisle, being able to communicate well, being level-headed, the business experience, real-world experience, actually, Amy, is what I think is another plus in my column, having raised a family, having struggled, having had a business, several businesses, and anybody that tells you they've always been successful probably isn't telling you the truth. So, you know, we struggle along the way. We learn lessons. I believe I'm mature, that I make my decisions based on fact, and that I work well with others. And frankly, I don't care whose idea it is. If it's a good idea for Dearborn and Michigan, I'm in.
And the last couple of weeks, you mentioned endorsements. October 10th, you were endorsed by the Free Press, and although they kind of gave a split, saying, you know, both also, you know, meaning you and George Durrani, have long histories of involvement with civic and community groups. Your platforms may be similar, with a focus on job creation, efficient government, and education. And they noted either would serve the district well, but gave you the nod because of your experience on the city council.
Thank you. Well, I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with your record. You can say a lot of things that you're going to do, but if you don't have the record to back it up, that makes it difficult. So I was very appreciative of that, and I think that, again, says that, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, et cetera, you know, agree in that, you know, I have the temperament and the experience and the knowledge to do the job.
This little sort of off the mark, but I was, when I was doing a little research, I see you have several Facebook pages, and I'm wondering how the social media has served your campaign, and who updates your Facebook pages, because you have several.
Well, you know, the kids get you on Facebook. It's a great way. I have one that serves in the military. Oh, he's been there for over 16 years, and, you know, that's one way I can always see the children and keep up with what they're doing. I'm not an expert at Facebook. I'm doing, you know, I do my best with it. But for me, it's just, it's been a great way for me to communicate with others that I wouldn't normally. And, you know, able to keep up with the kids. And I believe that, you know, it's where we're at today, obviously, in terms of the social media.
Oh, sure.
And, we were able to reach a lot of people that we would not have normally been able to.
Getting back to sort of the meat and potatoes, what position do you take, if any, if you're elected in November for a proposal for a Michigan Constitution Convention?
I don't believe right now is the time for that.
Why?
Well, number one, it's costly. And, you know, Michigan has its problems. We have a huge deficit. You know, we've got 14% or 13 plus or 14, who knows what it is today, percent unemployment. I think the new legislature and governor, when they get in there, they need to focus on the real meat and potatoes, getting jobs, focusing on education. If you're really serious about the economy, then obviously you need to be serious about educating our children and families. I have one that had to leave the state 2 years ago, other than the one that serves in the military, because of a job. I have many friends that tell me, well, you know, my son or daughter's at college. They're not coming back here. I mean, frankly, the holidays are coming around. I want people to think about this. Think about it at Thanksgiving, especially when you're gathered around your dinner table and you look around and who's missing. They're missing because they don't have a job. And I think that has touched everyone in some way. You know, son, daughter, husband, wife, you know, cousin, relative, somebody, you know, we all know someone that has had to leave the state to find employment. And, you know, and that's not acceptable. That is not acceptable. Michigan ranks 50 out of 50 in desirable places to locate a business. And our small business community basically is the backbone of our, you know, of our economy, and they employ people.
Do you think part of that reason is because it's so difficult for small businesses now to get loans?
Well, that's part of it, but that Michigan business tax is the biggest part. You know, it's difficult to keep the doors open when you're overtaxed, overregulated. You know, I think that most small business people, look, they work really hard. They're up early in the morning. They're there in their business till late at night. They want to comply. The last thing they want is somebody from the government in their business telling them they did something wrong. So I would say for the most part, everybody tries to comply. But when your regulations most of the time don't make sense, or, you know, a small business person finally gets it and has their, you know, wants to comply with the regulations, they're changed. And so we make it very difficult, rather than working hand in hand with these small business people in order for them to prosper and employ people and put money back in the economy, we make it very difficult for them to even keep the door open.
Well, Suzanne, this is Jay Cornick again. Both gubernatorial candidate, major candidates, Bonaro and Snyder, both said that they want to eliminate the sort of paperwork and red tape in order to facilitate new businesses to come into Michigan. I just wanted to bring your attention to that fact that you said where Michigan is the 50th in terms of desirability for businesses. The U.S. Taxpayers Union in Washington, D.C., which is a conservative group, lists Michigan taxation, and this is property and income taxes, as being 24th. That's only halfway down. Now, we should
well,
be
I'm
higher up.
But that because the studies that I've seen have listed that we are 50 out of 50. And I wish I had that with me.
Yeah. Well, it all depends on which criteria you're looking at. But right, and the study as I'm quoting is has to do with personal as well as business taxes. So
maybe.
Would you're therefore in favor of Rick Snyder's proposal to eliminate the Michigan business tax with a 6%, or you'd like to look at it later more in detail?
I'm definitely in favor of eliminating the tax, and in terms of the flat tax.
I'm not an expert at it.
I think that what I would need...
That was my next question.
Right, yeah. What I need to do is see how it applies to the real world. I mean, look, people talk about a lot of different things in campaigns. And for me, I'm a common sense person. To me, I have to see how it works, how it's going to affect you.
Mm-hmm.
So, sounds great. I believe that Rick Snyder has not only the ability, the education, the fortitude, and the right vision for this state. He has the right attitude in terms of politics. He's kind of a no-nonsense man, and he just wants to get down to work.
Okay. Well,
and I think, you know, I'm grateful for that, and I know the show's
right.
about me, not him.
Right, I was going to say, let's get back to you. But
For me, it has to be, how does that particular 6% flat tax equate to a small business person in the real world? And, you know, frankly, with the campaigning, that is one of the issues that are important, but it's one that nobody's actually given us a spreadsheet on and said this is how it will apply.
Here's a term.
But, I believe it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Obviously, his basic proposal, and there are some details in it, like replacing the current... There's four or five different ways that they tax business in Michigan, and he wants to replace a flat income tax on businesses from, it's like 4.9 now to 6, but he's going to eliminate all those other kind of crazy things. And I think there's some, there's also some ways to give credit or to give less tax, not the full 6%, to smaller businesses. At least I've heard that. I've seen something written. I don't know the details. My second question was going to be not his a proposal for that 6% so-called flat tax, but are you aware of the Michigan flat tax proposal that would do away with Michigan income tax as well as business taxes? Are you aware of that campaign and that proposal?
Well, I mean, I'm aware of, you know, just about everything that's out there, and again, how it's going to apply. Or look, when this next body comes in of legislators, as painful as it might be, Jay, everything's on the table.
Yep.
You know, everything has to be reviewed. Everything has to you know, everything has to be reviewed, and we have to see how and where it fits. I mean, a clear example is, other than the taxes, I mean, I think we spend about $34,000 a year on a prisoner, and we can't send our kids to college.
Yep.
I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's on the table as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I would like to see some real common sense type approaches. And a small example is, you know, what this legislature and governor and I'm, and what has happened in Michigan. I'll stay away from saying governor or legislature, but the issue is that they've pit, you know, business against labor, fighting for dollars, schools against cities to fight for dollars. Does that make any sense? I mean, frankly, does that make any sense to pit government agencies against each other to compete for dollars? I mean, the whole structure is wrong. For example, with the schools, why not give the schools a two-year budget so that they can plan, so they can have some stability for the future, rather than making them scramble every year, send out pink slips, rehire people. Same thing happens with the city. We'll do our budget. We're assuming, you know, with an assumption of what our revenue sharing is, and then, you know, every week there's something in the newspaper about they're cutting this or they're cutting that.
Right.
You know what? I think that the legislators ought to be find themselves, or at least they should dock their pay if they don't finish their budget.
Yeah, I thought they even the current legislature passed some sort of ruling that they would like slap themselves on the wrist.
They deserve it because
if they hadn't finished
a
budget
working
by a certain date, and apparently
I'd say June 1st.
Yeah,
apparently you know the city needs to balance its budget, the school needs to balance their budget, and these guessing games make it difficult for people to hire people, difficult, you know, back to the flat tax, you know, and everything else. People, all you want to know is where you're going to go, Jay. Do you want to know where you're going to be next year or in the next 5 years? I think most of us would be happy to know where we're going to be in the next couple
of
years.
Let me share with you something about budget that we know here at WHFR. Now, we're a sponsored activity, the college, but the funds that they give us are exactly the same amount, and it comes out of the student fees that are collected, so it doesn't come from any other budgets of the college or any federal funds or anything. But we get the same amount as the theater program and as the music program for the jazz band and the vocal choirs, as you may know, and yet each one of us, we have to raise money, even the newspaper, and Dennis Reimars is here in the studio, and he's now currently the editor of the Mirror newspaper on campus, and we have to sell ads, or with WHFR underwriting, we do a pledge drive once a year to do about two-thirds of our budget, so we have to raise our own money in our own ways. Nonetheless, I wanted to say about budget is that since I've been the advisor here since we started on the air 25 years ago, what was great was that the college, with that sponsored budget, that was a secure bottom line we could always count on, and they gave us great flexibility. I don't know if you know in business or at the college, a lot of the other departments, and there's, I'm sure, accounting reasons for it, but you have to project in these specific categories for the next year exactly what you're going to do, like repair or purchasing new materials. However, WHFR, because of the nature of our operation, some years we've got to buy all new equipment, or we have to do, like, almost the whole budget goes to repairing equipment, and switching between those categories is almost impossible in other areas. We were given sort of unspecified funds to a certain amount, and so we had that flexibility, and I can't tell you, for a small operation or an operation that's always watching the budget, how valuable that is, especially when you have costs you can't necessarily predict and you're running on a low budget. So
and that's my point exactly, like with regards to the schools, giving them some stability.
Right.
You know, a few weeks ago there was a letter or something in the Detroit News, I believe, about them wanting to cut the reimbursement funds for the community college.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the phone faxing, and, you know, my own party saying, okay, are you serious? The community colleges are the most accessible and affordable for so many people.
And we've got
the
programs, too.
Programs,
right, yeah.
Turnaround.
That the four-year schools are just not geared up for that or into that.
I mean, the training programs, you know,
of
to
course,
get people back
yeah,
into the
get them back
workforce.
In work as soon as
so
they
can. So I just
can,
said to them, you know, you guys are talking about the economy in Michigan. If you're serious about the economy, please get serious about educating our, you know, our citizens. And so, and I agree, that stability, that two-year plan for the schools would give them at least peace of mind and allow them to plan.
I hope that helps. I hope that can
come
about. Well,
I'm going to propose it, absolutely. Okay. And I am going to propose if the legislature doesn't get their work done by June 1st so everybody can have some sanity in order to work, then they should get their pay doc.
Right. We have about 5 minutes left of the time that we wanted to keep you today. And in the couple of last minutes here, we have some questions. You already answered one of them, but about the Constitutional Convention, whether or not you thought people should vote for that proposal or not, and you are against it. But here's some other quickie issues. We're going to give you 2 or 3 minutes after these several issues here, to sum up for our listeners about why they should vote for you, and also if you want to give them a phone number or website address at the end, too. So let me just go down quickly. How do you feel about term limits? Obviously, Gino Apollodori, who is term limited out of this same job that you're trying to get, that he's opening up the door for you or George or whoever wins the election. So do you like term limits or not?
You know, when I supported term limits, and having been on the council for 20 years, I've got kind of mixed feelings about it, I would say that, because there's definitely something to be said about experience. Maybe not, you know, like it is on a local level, that as long as, you know, you can win an election, you're elected. But, you know, I'm not sure that 6 years does the job, or whatever number that was put on it. I mean, I think it should be reviewed.
Well, I haven't talked to Gino Apollodori recently, but I know Gary Warrenchuk significantly when he finished his 6 years in the legislature and was term limited out and now, of course, serving as a county commissioner. He said, you know, that after the first 2 years I talked to him, and he said, I'm just starting to figure out how to do this, you know, with the bills and legislature and the lobbying and so on, that there's a lot of things to learn if you haven't physically been there, and that's true for everyone in their first time up there. But he indicated at the end of his 6 terms, I think I'm finally got the hang of it, and now I can't stay, of course. So, and of course, you're aware that Mayor Guido, you served on the council when he was our mayor, of course, for many years,
and
he was against term limits in general principle too. So it's a tough call there. What about part-time legislature? Part-time legislature,
you know,
that means...
That's exactly what we are doing here locally.
Yeah.
and frankly, I could work 24 hours a day as a council person. The bad part about a part-time legislature is then you wind up with a situation where you can work as much as you want and probably do as little as needed. And I think in today's economic times, I mean, I don't know. It's tough times. We really need to work to get the job done. So... Again, mixed feelings. Mm-hmm. Anything that saves the state. I mean, I know there are a lot of states that have that. Anything that puts us back in line, I'm open to.
Yeah. Currently, I understand legislators are only required to be in Lansing if they really want to attend, and they don't have to attend committees or other sessions, I guess, if they don't want to, but 4 days a week. And because of their time in adjournment, it works out to about 10 months. And I always feel bad even when the U.S. legislature adjourns because, and I know you got to go back and campaign and meet the folks and raise money at times too, I guess, but it always seems like they've left some bills in committee that maybe should have had action on them, whatever. Okay, moving just...
Well, that goes into personal responsibility too. So.
Right.
You don't have to worry about me. I'm a workaholic.
Well, two last issues, and then we can have you do your summation here. State health care for public workers. You know, Andy Dillon, who's term limited out from Dearborn Heights, had a proposal to help out that situation, hopefully to lower costs. Do you see that as something that we should look into?
Well, we have to lower costs. Just like I said, as painful as it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's on the table as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. What about the...
But, I mean, I'm not in favor of... Obviously, I've been a small business person all my life. You know,
right.
My dad used to hang transmissions on the line at Ford Motor Company. I'm not... You know, I mean, everybody has made sacrifice, no doubt. Some departments have made more than others, but I do believe that everything is on the table.
Okay. Last single topic question, and then you can sum up for us. Second bridge over Detroit River. Current owner, the ambassador, Manny Moran, wants to build a second one himself. Canada says, we don't want that. It's been tied up in the legislature, which way they're going to go. How would you vote? What would you support in the legislature on that topic?
I'm not privy to all the information that everybody has, and so that's kind of a difficult answer. You know, in principle, I would think, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense to open a second bridge.
Yeah.
However, I don't have the information that the people that are voting on it at the current time does. I haven't had the briefing
sure.
sessions.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had, you know, the material. All I get is currently is what you and I all are privy to in terms of the, you know, the reports. So
okay.
I think that mm-hmm. that is something that's going to take a lot of work on my part to get up to speed on, and I'm willing to do that.
Well, that's great. Okay. Just to sum up, thank you for all your time on the Journal today. Suzanne Serini, we've been talking to, Dearborn Council person right now, and running for the job of Michigan 15th District Representative to Lansing in the November 2nd election. So sum up for our listeners, again, why they should vote for you for this office.
Thank you so much for allowing me this time. This is a critical time in Michigan. To me, this election's about jobs, education, and our families. This is a time where many people are losing loved ones to other states, where businesses are being closed, where our senior citizens are having to choose between a meal, unfortunately, and their medication. There's no excuse for where we're at as a state, I believe. I'm committed to work with everyone when I go to Lansing. I don't have an agenda. I think I am, as well as everybody else, tired of all of the bickering that's resulted in bad legislation. I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and work with everyone for what's better for Dearborn and for the state of Michigan. And I'd ask for everybody's vote.
And if they have more, if they need more information or would like to help you
in
your
campaign?
I have a website,
you know, mm-hmm. and as we said earlier, you know, one of the things, again, I think that's really critical is that I've got real-world experience having raised a family and with the 13 grandchildren. And I think there's probably not much more that you can say other than somebody that's been through that.
Give us that website
really
address.
Really had to be involved not only in schools, education, and being personally responsible raising a family.
Sure.
So
my
website's pretty simple. You could just put in Suzanne Serini, but it's www.serini4staterep.com.
For state rep. Okay. That, again, is for those folks that haven't been keeping up on all the years of Suzanne's been in office, that's Serini, S-A-R-E-I-N-I.
The number four.
The number four, and then state rep, yes. And there's no dashes or underlining
Nothing.
Or anything, .com. And that's her website address. And, of course, I assume, being on the council, they could probably call your phone number at the city council office, although maybe that's not for your campaigning
use. For campaigning,
okay,
absolutely.
So, but they could give you maybe other contact info at that number, perhaps, if you had to do it that way, folks. But Serini for staterep.com. Suzanne Serini, good luck to you in getting your message out.
Thank you
for being on the Journal today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And we're going to continue on with more of the new WHFR Journal. Here's a couple of comments from Jim Hightower, our nationally syndicated progressive voice.
The Federal Reserve, which controls America's monetary policy, says it is trying to invigorate job creation in our country by slashing interest rates to the bone. The Fed's move allows big corporations to borrow money for next to nothing so they can expand and start hiring again. Great goal! How's it working out? Well, the first step has gone splendidly, with such giants as DuPont, Hertz, IBM, Microsoft, and PepsiCo rushing to grab the windfall. They've borrowed hundreds of billions of dollars at interest rates of less than 1%. However, there's been quite a stumble on step two of the Fed's plan. Rather than putting this enormous stash of cash to work for America, the corporations are simply squirreling it away for their own enrichment, refusing to spend it on the job expansion that our economy desperately needs. For example, Microsoft, one of the richest corporations on Earth, amassed nearly $5 billion under this opportunistic borrowing scheme, yet has put none of the cheap money into job creation. Instead, it's using a big chunk of it to buy back stock from its own shareholders, a move that merely profits the handful of rich elites who control Microsoft. Worse, such corporate powers as Hertz and PepsiCo are using the funds to take over competitors. These consolidations will actually cut jobs while reducing consumer choices and raising our prices. Indeed, there's no provision in the Fed's program to keep the giants from investing the money in foreign expansion, thus offshoring more American jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, and there's the rub in nearly all of Washington's indirect job creation efforts. Government officials blithely dole out billions and even trillions to corporations and banks with no strings attached. So the big shots and bastards gleefully grab the money and run. The big brand name corporations love advertising. They love it so much that they spend some $150 billion a year in our country to put all sorts of slick'em and hokum on their products and on their own public image. But there is one kind of advertising that these same self-aggrandizing outfits despise: ads that challenge their carefully crafted images. A nonprofit doctors group recently got a blast of corporate wrath when it produced a TV commercial that dared to take on Mighty McDonald's. The group, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, was challenging the fast food behemoth to offer some menu choices healthier than its artery-clogging burgers. The ad was a hoot. It featured the body of a deceased fat man lying on a cold slab at the morgue. He held a half-eaten burger in his hand, and McDonald's Golden Arch logo was superimposed over his deathly white feet. Then, an epitaph for the burger-wolfing dead man appeared on the screen, declaring, "I was loving it." But when the doctors sought to buy airtime on South Florida television stations, none of them loved it. They showed no sense of humor and no sense of free speech. Fox, NBC, ABC, CBS, and others flat-out refused to air the ad. One station initially okayed it, but then weaseled out by saying the commercial could run only if all references to McDonald's were removed. It seems the stations were afraid of being sued by the burger giant, or were afraid that McDonald's would pull its advertising from them. Indeed, corporate headquarters sent a sharp shot across the bow of the stations, declaring that this commercial is outrageous, misleading, and unfair to all consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying, unfair to consumers? Most consumers would like to see the public airwaves opened up to the public, not just to big money corporations.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Hope you enjoy Jim Hightower's commentaries. That last one shows you why that we do public service announcements for free here, that on the commercial media, you have to realize the only way they get money is by selling time to people that want to advertise their products or services. That's the name of that game. Because who would give them money for nothing, for no payback? Well, people give WHFR money directly because we are the alternative. We are the choice of people, especially for the new WHFR Journal, the only local, truly local news station for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And we try to be fair, we try to be fair by going after people who are not the major candidates and not supporting the major issues. The reason that we have featured George Durrani and Suzanne Serini is primarily because neither one of them are the incumbents. Okay, because there is no incumbent for this office, and there was only three of them, including Daryl Smith of the U.S. Taxpayers Party. But who else would give Daryl Smith to be part of that? Amy Smith, Daryl Smith, Amy Smith, same thing. There's an Amy Smith of the Green Party who's running for 16th District National Office. That's John Dingell and Robert Steele. And I wanted to talk about that. It's one of the stories in the paper. One of the papers this week has a big page about, it's the Dearborn Press and Guide from October 20th, Dingell versus Steele. Mm-hmm. Of course, they leave out Amy Smith. And Amy's upset about that because Amy has the first name as Amy. Our Amy, their Amy. She spells
I'm
it differently.
Not writing for anything.
She spells it differently.
It's a French
so.
Way.
Yeah, okay. So a lot of the commercial media and the way the Democrats and Republicans play the game is they don't want to be part of anything that gives you an idea that there's any other choice.
Right.
Even though there is. You could vote for them. Enough people vote for them, they'll win. And, you know, I'm just saying they're there, and you figure out however you can about these other people. So we were happy to feature these other people. Let me just give you the dates there. If you want to go to our website, www.whfr.fm, if you click on the journal button on the homepage there and go by date, you can either listen to this show again, which is available after 2 o'clock every Friday. The current show is available there as an archive, as a podcast. And today's date, of course, would be 10/22. 10. George Duraney had his interview. It's true it was a primary interview, but it was basically the same questions and the same length with Suzanne Serini on July 23rd.
Okay.
And Daryl Smith, running for the same office as George and Suzanne, he was interviewed here on the Journal for about half an hour, same questions, September 24th. So again, Duraney, 7/23/10, and Daryl Smith, 9/24/10, if you want to hear their answers to the same questions that we did on today's show with Suzanne Serini. But usually we try to give you a full range of ideas or supplement the ideas from the commercial media. The Hightower commentary was about an anti-McDonald's spot taken out by a nonprofit group that was trying to point out how unhealthy a lot of McDonald's burgers are. And, of course, this has been pointed out, and nobody sued the author of the book Fast Food Nation. This is for about 10 years now. That book, Fast Food Nation, I know they made a movie out of it, but that was a fictional thing based on the book. But anyway, Fast Food Nation went on chapter after chapter about how McDonald's gets its beef and what kinds of additives and preservatives and chemicals are in that. Of course, anybody who's a vegetarian or a vegan, even further away from meat, will tell you how much meat can cause health problems if eaten in large quantities, too. Well, altogether, there is an argument to be made. And so this nonprofit group was willing to pay for commercial time on major media, you know, NBC, CBS, Fox, in this country, to have their spot run. And, of course, they couldn't run it many times. They didn't have much money. But they were refused and denied by all of them. And then McDonald's lawyers got after them, even though they hadn't even placed it yet, and threatened the networks with lawsuits, libel. And, well, again, they were only pointing out facts about the nature of the beef. Where's the beef? What is the beef, in fact? What is it like? And they were denied that. There's a group called Adbusters in British Columbia, and they sponsor a holiday, a national holiday now called Buy Nothing Day. It comes up day after Thanksgiving here in America. And they have tried to take out ads just talking about how bad it is to believe 30-second ads and to use that as a basis for buying anything. And I might add, including political candidates. I mean, it's much more beneficial to listen to a candidate like here on the Journal for 30 minutes straight than anything else. Well, you know, Adbusters was not allowed to buy any commercial time either. The network is so rich, they can deny a few nonprofits from doing what seems to be might hurt their business. I mean, what if McDonald's didn't advertise anymore on national media, as right. if they could ever survive without it? So that was the gist of the Hightower spot. And we do two so-called nonprofit PSAs every hour here, folks, not because anybody tells us to, and they don't pay us any money for it, but because we believe in a lot of these causes. And after all, they're nonprofits because the federal and or the state government have said, these organizations are working in the public interest. That's why they don't have to pay taxes. And yet, commercial media won't let them use some of their money to get their message out. Just wrong, 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 folks. Just like the power of the big businesses now to influence political elections, too, which is no thanks to that Supreme Court ruling a year ago that allow businesses to act like private individuals, which they are not legally able to do in any other country of the world, because they simply aren't, folks. I mean, talk to your friendly lawyer about that, about whether that's good or bad, and read the books that have been written on that decision from the Supreme Court. There's other ways to go. Let's talk about first of all, there's a banquet tonight. It's sold out. The Arab American, is it Coordinating Committee? AACC.
Chamber of Commerce.
Chamber of Commerce, of course. Mm-hmm. Dennis doesn't have his mic on again.
I don't need it. I'm so darn loud.
Oh, no.
He's like, no, we're doing this right.
I got all three mics on, so wherever you want to fall there. Right. It's,
knows me.
Yeah, here in Dearborn, it's a sort of a closed house, I guess. It's at the Henry, which is that stupid rename of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
I guess he doesn't like it.
There's a lot of Henrys in the world, and Henry Ford was, not a great guy, totally, even though, yes, he invested money in Dearborn, and for the time being, we can't blame him for the fact that his company is not paying their fair share of property taxes. We can't blame Henry Ford for that because he's dead now. But anyway, that's my opinion. You know, the opinions in this show, whether it's Suzanne Zerini's or mine or Amy's or Dennis or whoever else we get here, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. And by all means, they don't tell us to say any of this stuff. Snyder versus Bernero, it won't be a debate, I understand, but both of them will have a chance to make comments after the meal tonight. Is that what you understand,
That's
Dennis?
What I understand. It's interesting. Well, they're the keynote speakers. Right. What was interesting is when I brought this up to Amy, she said she kept calling it the debate because it may actually.
It was wrong to say that because I don't believe Rick Snyder wants to debate anymore nor put himself in that position.
I agree.
But he will have that sort of town hall.
So maybe one sided debate?
He'll talk, then somebody else can talk.
A couple nights ago, Devin Scillian on Channel 4 had them both for 15 minutes each in a half an hour, but they switched seats back and forth, and I think whoever wasn't on camera was in a soundproof booth somewhere.
Really?
So they could not make comments on what the other candidates said.
We should do that here.
But they brought them back and forth to the same seat, asked them the same questions, and then but they didn't know what the other one had said.
Oh, well, actually, so that's kind of interesting.
I like that.
It is, yeah.
Did it work out?
Scillian had very good questions, better than the so-called debate that was handled by PBS.
Good.
And, of course, the debate only allowed sound bites. I mean, really, about 1 minute, 2 minute answers from both of them, even though that went on an hour, that so-called debate.
Right.
And even in their rebuttals back and forth, which are limited to six, and I think they used all the rebuttals up in the first 15 minutes even. I mean, that would have been more fireworks, unlimited rebuttals.
Ooh. Can you imagine? We'd still be debating.
Well, I mean, I think you know more about a candidate. First of all, if they're given a chance to more fully explain themselves or their ignorance. So Scillian did have only about three or four questions and then a couple of this rapid-fire round stuff that we did a little bit with Suzanne Zerini in the last 5 minutes of each 15 minutes. So we only had 15 minutes with each of them. They didn't know what the other had said and so on. And I found that very valuable. He is a good questioner. He went after questions that both of them sort of clammed up on and didn't answer in the debate.
Right.
Like, how would you cut that $1.6
billion? Yeah.
And, of course, neither of them gave an answer again, really. Yeah. Well, I don't know until I get there, and, we'll see.
Paperwork.
Yeah, but in that particular format, they're not reacting, which is so common in a regular debate. Right. And that is, I think, what kind of, it doesn't annoy me, but I think that takes away from some of the honesty.
And folks, I'm sure the WDIV website, whatever it is, that they'll have that whole show archived as a podcast. I know WDET 101.9 FM, WDET.org, I think is their website, or WDETFM.org. They've changed their website address in the last couple of years, that they have their hour-long interviews with Craig Folley. It was on the Craig Folley Show, that's F-A-H-L-E, done by Rick Pluta in Lansing.
That's right.
But those were nice, extended, one-hour-long interviews with both Snyder and Bernero. And then, of course, Craig was nice enough to mention there are other candidates running. But
and
that's it.
That's how he did it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he also asked if they'd support, other candidates in a debate. And I think Bonero said, well, after we get this one done, yeah, then they can come, knowing they were only going to do one debate.
Yeah, well, Snyder wouldn't allow that. Again, no. He's if you're in the lead, you don't want to do anything to upset that. And you never know that accidentally you might be having a bad night and, you know, so-called foot-in-mouth disease strikes. And
you know, spat of truthfulness.
Yeah, yeah, or just emotion. I can remember a couple of national presidential debates, and one candidate all of a sudden started getting upset about what would, I think the question was, what would you do if your wife was raped or something?
Seriously?
And that blew up his campaign right there, because he actually got angry and upset, and rightly so, when that came up. And I remember Edmund Muskie running for president, a Democrat from, I think, Maine, a senator from Maine, many years, 20 years ago. He started crying in the answer to a question. It's just a reporter on the fly. And, of course,
do you remember the question?
No, it doesn't matter. But Howard Dean, because he, you know, in a victory speech, he did, he went, yippee, or something. As if he's an idiot. He was just so happy. And just and that ruined his campaign. Governor of Michigan, Governor Romney, George Romney, Mitt Romney's father, back in the 60s when he got back from a tour of Vietnam, as they gave a free tour of Vietnam for all the presidential candidates in the middle of the war. I said, oh, what a benefit. Oh, what a great perk. But he said, I was brainwashed. When he came back, it was a statement. He said, what did you think about your visit to Vietnam? He said, I was brainwashed. And, well, you can't have a president who's brainwashed.
Right.
So that ruined his campaign.
Or even brainwashable.
So just to show you that just a moment of emotion that's interpreted in the wrong way on the mass media, or a phrase that might mean several things, but it's interpreted one way by a majority, you can't get out of it. You're trapped, and that just dooms you. So I think, unfortunately, it makes these candidates extremely cautious, not willing to give opinions about anything, and just they go back to their practiced phrases, sound bites, as we call them in the business, that are safe, and also not telling you anything, folks. And all the political spots are attacking the other candidates. I still want to see a Bonero or a Snyder spot that only talks about what they support. And, of course, all the other candidates from the Green Party, the U.S. Taxpayers Party, Libertarian Party, and there might be another one somewhere for some office in Michigan, other than those three parties. There's a few independents running, write-in votes, too, that are happening. Who knows what they believe? Because they're not allowed in the debates. They're not featured in stories in the papers. You know, where's the press and guide? I mean, in giving background stories, this whole Steele versus Dingell thing, that's just the PR based on the press releases coming out of those two candidates' offices. They did have a debate Wednesday night, I think it was, down in Monroe Community College. And, of course, that was, they notified you, thank you, Press and Guide and Times Herald, on the same day. So you just pick up and run down to Monroe Community College. What is that, 25 miles south of here?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, for that debate that night, and then, of course, it was only Dingell and Steele, not Amy Smith, the Green Party candidate, who is the third person that officially is on the ballot that people could vote for. There is no Libertarian there. I guess they felt that was hopeless, especially if you're not going to be invited to any debate. Also, in the Press and Guide, in regard to Dingell versus Steele, rather than the paper, and we'll wait till next week to see if either paper actually has any recommendations. If they're so brave, like in the old days newspapers were, to actually take sides and say who they think the best candidates are, as a newspaper news staff, knowing both the public sides and some of the private sides of these candidates. What do they think after their extensive coverages? Well, Mr. Connolly and Mr. Goodman, who both Connolly representing Republicans in Dearborn and Goodman, Morris Goodman, representing Democrats, they wrote two editorials, one favoring Dingell, of course, from Goodman, and one favoring Steele, the Republican, from Connolly, of course. But that's not like the paper is, number one, getting the real word from the candidates, or actively telling us how they analyze it. I mean, these people are not analyzing Dingell and Steele. They're just apologists for them, all due respect, Mr. Connolly and Goodman. It would have been more productive, and I've seen this be very good, if Goodman was assigned to write an editorial about what was good about Steele.
Right.
And vice versa.
Interesting.
And I've seen that work amazingly well in debates. In other words, mm-hmm. force Connolly to write everything that's good about John Dingell.
To take the other side.
And, boy, then you really get it honed down. Well, if the opponent or the person that favors the opponent says this much good about you, it must really be good because they're not even in favor of you, you know. And maybe both of their editorials would have been shorter.
Right.
But you would have gotten something closer to the truth. Very interesting device, and of course nobody uses it, but we need more opinions out there. We're going to see if we can sneak into that banquet tonight and get a report for you next week, but we don't expect a debate there or comments longer than 5 or 10 minutes from either candidate, to be honest about it.
And I doubt we would sneak in. I'm not going to wear I'm not
jump
wearing that
on
plant
that.
Outfit again.
Well, I simply was trying to imply that we weren't going to be able to pay because we don't have any money.
No.
But we will be there officially if we can be. They apparently are reconsidering their media table. And
they're actually doing a background check on you now.
Yeah, well, then I'm out.
That could be the delay.
He says I'm out.
My background goes way back. That'll take them a while. Okay, order, folks, you got to know, this is a big-time important information here at a minute before Highway 61 gets started. We're waiting for Joanne to arrive right on time, of course, with the Blues Show that'll be here for the next 4 hours, Highway 61. As WHFR Dearborn, don't you know? But I want you to know that you got to order your 2011 Dearborn City calendar. Okay, this never was the case before. Everybody, every residence in Dearborn always got a free calendar mm-hmm. that listed city activities, special events, and the most important thing, trash pickup days.
Absolutely.
For you to put in your kitchen and consult every week. And because of economic troubles, you only get one if you ask for it. Now, it's free, so when I say order, you have to go online, cityofdearborn.org, and it says order your calendar, and you click and you put your name and address in there, and they'll get one to a household free. But I know my neighborhood association in East Dearborn has sent out emails to all of us saying, hey, if you got a senior next door and you don't think they know how to use computers,
that's nice.
Get their information and put it in for them. Now, I guess they could also call City Hall about that and request it by phone. I'm just wondering, did they not order the usual 20,000, 30,000? I mean, we got about 25 residences in Dearborn. They only order 10. What happens if they really do get all these orders? And by the way, it's November 5th.
More jobs.
It's coming up in only 10 days. And so they only issue this press release maybe a few days ago, got it in the papers. With only 2 weeks' notice, how many people are going to find out unless they're listening to this show?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And then how many of those have the time or the knowledge to go online or even the technology to go online? You know, that's a real question. So if you want, if you're living in Dearborn and you want one of those quite helpful 2011 city calendars, you'll have to order it. There's no charge, but you have to order it through the online service, or you want to complain about that issue, then just call City Hall in general, or Dearborn City Hall, and tell them it should be free no matter what, even if they have to raise your taxes.
Hmm.
No, I'm not saying you should say that.
That's
but,
pushing it.
You know, it's interesting in a year when they sort of said that we're, you know, going to be lean and mean, we're borrowing money, though we're not going to make any big cuts. They're cutting our calendars. Gee,
I think that's
whiz.
A place to start.
But they're
well,
not.
Maybe.
They're
maybe.
Just, they're making us, you know, it's a responsible
be more proactive.
Thing to do.
You could opt out if you don't need that
right.
calendar.
Right.
And some
I
people
love it,
use.
Though, don't you? And the photos
I mean,
they have.
If you never set your trash out anyway, and you have no trash, then you don't need a calendar
or
like that.
Or if you know when that day is.
Yeah, inside your recycling bins now, they put a calendar.